Hey there, it's your friend Stormy Warren here, and I want to invite you to my new home, The Big 615, exclusively on TuneIn. It's the official home of country music broadcasting live from Nashville to the world. Get the latest on country music, from your favorite artists to the hottest songs climbing up the charts. Oh, and it's commercial-free. Hear it all on The Stormy Warren Show, weekdays from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central. Download the free TuneIn app from the App Store. That's TuneIn. Or ask your device to play The Big 615 on TuneIn.
Whether you're doing a dance to your favorite artist in the office parking lot, or being guided into Warrior One in the break room before your shift, whether you're running on your Peloton tread at your mom's house while she watches the baby, or counting your breaths on the subway,
inhaling and long exhale out.
Peloton is for all of us, wherever we are, whenever we need it. Download the free Peloton app today. Peloton app available through free tier or paid subscription starting at $12.99 per month.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Tuesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158. And that free Odyssey app, 855-212-4CBS, number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. And you could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Cole Kublik going to join us. We'll do a little college football fix with him 20 minutes from now, as we'll be talking some SEC football. And then we'll be joined later on in the program at 7:20 p.m. Eastern, 4:20 p.m. Pacific with Ryan Hollins, as we'll get all the latest on Damian Lillard and all the other happenings around the association with free agency set to tip off on Friday on June 30th. And producing this extravaganza, I can't tell today if he looks like he's a seventh grader that just got stuffed into a locker or if he's a 45-year-old man that just got back from a golf outing, but here he is nonetheless, is of course Hot Take Hickey.
I don't know about that Hot Take Hickey.
Hickey is wearing a polo shirt today with, how would you describe that, salmon color shorts, and your shirt is tucked in, and I think like your belt is up to your nipples almost. That is a very, very, very highly tucked in shirt, and your shorts are pulled all the way up, so you give off major nerd vibes today or dad vibes?
I would use class is the word I would say. I give off class vibes to class this place up.
Oh, I don't think people are all of a sudden going to be looking around and saying, wow, Hickey's dressed nicely today, so I'm going to go get inspired to wear something nice tomorrow to work. I don't think that works around here. I think you believe you're a trendsetter here at CBS Sports Radio. I don't think anyone is following the fashion trend of Hot Take Hickey, even though I will say, most of the time when you do come into the studio, you give off a very boat vibe, like as if you're always a captain of a ship on a boat, because you do wear a lot of boat gear, I do realize, with the amount of, how would you kind of describe it, the shirts that you wear? It's very boaty.
I would say beachy. That's the beachy vibe I go for.
Okay.
Beachy. Relax, beach vibe. That's my style.
My Twitter's been blowing up today. Well, my phone's been blowing up for multiple reasons. Someone bought an iPhone today with my credit card. That's a great text that you wake up to. Ready to pick up your iPhone tomorrow, sir? It's 7:30 a.m. I thought it was spam at first, and then I saw that there was a $1,200 charge on my credit card. And I probably have now received 450 emails today, with my email being used to sign up for other accounts. So I'm in a peachy mood today, Hickey. I'm in a wonderful mood today. My day has been going great. Right, to cancel my credit card, get reissued another one, and I was off to a splendid start this morning. And here's the dumbest part of them all. If you're going to hack someone's credit card and take someone's credit card, wouldn't you just get the iPhone shipped somewhere instead of going to pick it up at the store? Because I talked to a buddy of mine at Apple, you have to show ID when you go pick up the the iPhone, and it has to be my name, and it was under my account. You would think that you would get that ship somewhere, and then maybe you could just let it get through the cracks, but I already stopped that. So I'm waiting for the other shoe to fall here, Hickey, and I'm waiting to see what else is going to transpire in this hack, because I keep on getting messages and emails in languages that I've never seen before, and I know what the emails are because, like, every eighth email is in English, and it's trying to have me confirm an email. So I'm just waiting for – I log into my account, and it shows that there's zero funds left at this rate.
I mean, criminals, they are very smart sometimes in their ability to get information, also very stupid at how they use it in the sense of, oh, let me just go to the store and pick it up with an ID that I don't have. So you kind of see why a lot of criminals do eventually get caught.
And it was my hometown Apple store, which what a statement that is, that people have hometown Apple stores, but they went right to the location where if I was growing up as a kid and buying an Apple product, that's where I would have definitely have purchased an Apple product. I almost wanted to kind of launch my own investigation, and I was thinking about calling out sick tomorrow, not putting a hold on my credit card, and not even making this an issue, and just kind of parole outside of the Apple store and wait to see if someone was actually going to go pick it up tomorrow and kind of do one of those sneak attacks. I got you! And then see who it actually was. Because I'd love to know what this person looks like and who this person actually was and if they do actually have an axe to grind with me or if they're just a professional con artist. That's what I'm trying to figure out here, Hickey. I want to say it's the latter, but my mother goes, do you think it's a stalker? Do you think it's like a listener of the show or something like that? And I have had a few stalkers throughout the years that we usually don't talk about those stalkers on the air because you don't want to give those stalkers what they're looking for. But for a second, my mom, when I was telling her this story today, Hickey, she thought it may have been a P1, big-time P1 of the Zach Gelb show and thought it was potentially a stalker, which would have been really something.
But wouldn't they try to, like, meet you instead of, like, steal your credit card information and try to buy an iPhone?
They have a lot of my information now, I'll tell you that. They have my credit card. They have my old billing address. They have my email. They have everything.
What would you have done if you hypothetically followed through on your plan, took off tomorrow, and basically staked out this Apple store? Once, you know, if you're like in the store, say, perusing, quote unquote, waiting for the person to come in, say, oh, I have an order, Gelb. What would you have done if you heard that?
I think I would have dusted off a police costume that I once wore for Halloween one year when I was in college. I think I would have showed up to the event, you know, the store dressed up as a police officer with handcuffs. And I would have issued a citizen's arrest on that person until the actual police did come by. That's what I think I would have done.
So right there, take him down.
Or if
pick
I'm being,
up for Gelb, boom!
If I'm being serious, because I probably wouldn't want to dress up as a police officer because then you're impersonating a police officer and then I could actually go to jail or something like that. Maybe I would just storm the Apple store with my camera out and say, oh, you're not Zach Gelb, I'm Zach Gelb, and then try to make some kind of video out of it.
Do the old Michael Moore.
Yeah. What was the, remember the How to Catch a Predator show? Do you remember what that guy's name was? Scott something?
I think it's Chris Hansen.
Oh, Chris Hansen.
Chris Hansen.
Yeah. So maybe I would kind of go like all Chris Hansen.
I think he had backup though.
How to Catch a Criminal. I would get backup.
I'm just saying, you're a big man, but if the guy's bigger than you, that's when you could be in trouble.
If
he rolls in squad deep, you could also be in trouble.
Yeah, that's true. I think I would hire some personal security guards. That's what I would do.
Well, I am for hire, so if you need some muscle, don't worry.
You would probably be on the bottom of my list,
my friend. I'm here to back you up.
As much as I love working with you and as much as I love you, as I see Hickey is now air punching right now when you have this
you
shirt
show that form, that criminal is screwed.
And your shorts pulled up to your nipples right now, I would not be I would not put you in the roster even. If I was like coming up with a college football type of roster, let's say like 100, 125 people, as Hickey is now flexing, I'm sorry, you would not make the cut.
You lost. That's all I got to say. I would have helped stop the criminal, but I guess there's other people that are less qualified than me that will get the job. Congrats to them.
Let's get to the latest on Damian Lillard. So I think I want to say I'm in the clear right now, Hickey, but there's a big part of me that I don't want to mush it here. So if you could actually do me a favor, since you screwed my trip over to Denver, when you guaranteed that there was going to be a game five and there wasn't a game five and I had tickets for Nuggets and Lakers in the conference final, can you guarantee me that this hack is not over so we could have a reverse mush here and then the hack would actually be over? Can you do that for me, please?
I will do it with the caveat of the intentional mush never works.
Well,
but
it has. for you. It's well documented on this show.
Well, it's things I believe that have just not gone right. I've never actually said, oh, I really hope this happens, knowing I don't want it to happen, and it works in my favor.
We got audio around
but
here,
if you
but want go to ahead.
Try yeah. for the intentional mush, you are screwed. Your credit card's over. Your life savings are gone.
Thank you. Now I feel great. This is the best I felt all throughout the day. All righty, let's get to Joe Cronin. Yesterday, he said, I met with Dame and Aaron Goodwin this afternoon. We had a great dialogue. We remain committed to building a winner around Dame. So really, there's nothing new after yesterday other than, okay, we know they had this meeting and there was no trade request made by Damian Lillard, and Dame is still giving the Portland Trailblazers time. He's still showing patience with the Portland Trailblazers, and I guess you could say is still giving them the benefit of the doubt. But let's hear from Brian Windhorst. He did shed some more light on what actually happened in that meeting yesterday, and he laid it out on Get Up earlier this morning. Here's Windy.
He said at the end of the season, get me veterans. The draft came and went, no veterans. He's still not pressing from what I have been told, that he is still going to give the Blazers every opportunity to work through this free agency process this week, whether it's through trades or signing players. Now, I will tell you that this is going to potentially cause some teams that were going to make offers for him to have to move on with business. They were waiting to see whether Dame Lillard was going to be on the market before they started to make moves this week. Now some teams are going to have to make a decision, either go forward or wait around. Lillard is going to wait around. It's certainly a move. It's, I guess, not surprising considering the way Dame has operated with the Blazers now for years. But it did take some people in the league by surprise that he didn't go forward with what everyone was expecting him to do.
So here's where I'm lost with Damian Lillard. I think the biggest thing from Windhorst yesterday is he's still not pressing. And I'm operating under the belief that Damian Lillard will be on the Portland Trailblazers come the first game of the season. Hickey has taken the other stance where Hickey believes he's as good as gone and eventually he will request a trade. That's the odd part to me. And as I said yesterday, Hickey, I think he could easily get talked into staying in Portland, and the bar is not that high where he continues to say, I want to have a team that can contend for a championship. I really don't think much has to be done here for him to actually think that. And it may just be bringing back Jeremy Grant and adding one other minuscule piece. And I really do believe Dame's going to give this team the benefit of the doubt once again, but him still not pressing at this point, everything Dame says, it's almost like empty threats. When you go back to the draft, I want you to use the third pick and I want you to go get a proven player. I don't want to be a part of this youth movement. And then a few days later, it's all of a sudden, oh, I'm still going to give you time to figure out how you're going to make this right. And until Dame says the words, I want out, I want to get traded, I'm still going to operate under the belief that he's going to be with the Portland Trailblazers, because every step that he takes, it kind of just shows that even though everyone's trying to get him out of Portland and he keeps on saying he wants to win a championship, those words are very empty. And I have not heard him say, even though he's kind of flirted with Miami and flirted with Brooklyn, it always goes back to when you're spinning the wheel that the needle is kind of landing on, and the pin is kind of landing on Dame staying with the Portland Trailblazers, because he never actually says, I'm done, I'm finished, go trade me right now, and let's work to get me out of here.
At this point, I think Sean Hyken yesterday made a really good point. I just don't think this would play out publicly. Like, I think you can have that conversation yesterday, and you can kind of keep it behind closed doors, and then also now work on a trade to where we're not going to hear Damian Lillard publicly say, I'm done with Portland. Basically, I'm in the market. Let's try to make a deal done. And all of a sudden now we're all talking and watching this play out in front of our eyes. I think Sean's right. We could see this kind of happen maybe quickly, but also happen behind the scenes where all of a sudden the story that breaks is he's traded to whatever team, Heat, Nets, somewhere else. Instead of Dame requested trade, it's boom, Dame's traded.
And the other thing is that I thought that Windhorst said when he talked about the other, it puts the other teams in a tricky situation. Do you wait? Or do you move on and go fill that money that you would allocate it for Damian Lillard in other places, or take some of that money that you would have put to Dame and go get other players for your teams? And it's almost as if Dame keeps on saying things where he wants the organization to take him seriously, but at the end of the day, he's just trying to have time run out and enough teams back out, or maybe wait until the trade deadline to get back in, where Damian Lillard gets what he really wants, and that's to stay in Portland, and maybe you get incremental moves made to, in his mind, have him think that there's actually a chance that they go contend for a championship, which in reality, they're nowhere close to doing that. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Cole Kublick will join us next.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. We miss college football.
Bennett takes the snap and the shotgun, throws for the corner. Brock Bowers one-on-one. Caught! Touchdown! He ate him alive! Falls down into the end zone. Six more for Georgia.
We can't wait for the 2023 season.
Caleb Williams throws the fade in the corner. Oh, caught! Touchdown, Trojans!
And we're counting down the days to kickoff.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
I said no.
Are we there yet?
What's wrong with your ears?
Here is your college football fix, only on the Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, this is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Let's tap into the SEC, and we welcome in Cole Kublick right now. Cole, appreciate the time as always. How are you?
Doing great, Zach. Always good to be with you.
Well, thanks so much for jumping on board with us. Cole, of course, is an analyst for ESPN, the SEC Network, and you can listen to him each and every morning along with Greg McElroy on Mac and Cube on Jocks FM. I got to start you off with Nick Saban. I know he told the recruit the other day that he's going to coach until he's dead. We'll see how much longer that is going to be and if that's actually going to be true. But when you look at Alabama for this upcoming year, Cole, what are your expectations for them after the season they just had a year ago and a lot of turnover on the roster?
I think my expectations, Zach, are a little bit higher than some other folks. And I understand that we look at quarterback and you ask the question, why would Tyler Buckner transfer there? There are some people that will just say, oh, well, it's Tommy Rees. They were together at Notre Dame. But if you recall, Tommy Rees came a little bit later and also had a part in bringing in Sam Hartman, which was going to push him to the bench. So I don't think it was just because those two knew one another. And I speak from experience with talking to Bill O'Brien and Lane Kiffin and Brian Daboll after taking over as offensive coordinator in Alabama. You don't just run your system. You run Alabama's system, the terminology, the verbiage. It all stays the same. Now, you call it your way. Nick Saban gives you the freedom to do that, but it doesn't change with a new offensive coordinator. So Tommy Rees will have to learn that system, so that's not a big advantage for Buckner. But when you look around that football team, Zach, it's interesting because certain people will say, oh, yeah, Ohio State, they can go win a national title. They'll say, oh, Georgia definitely can go win a national title. People will say Tennessee could be in the mix. And, you know, those teams all have new or newer quarterbacks. They're going to be taking over. And just because Alabama has a new quarterback, if you went in the SEC, I think they have the best guard in the SEC. I think they have the best edge defender in the SEC. I think they have the best interior defensive lineman in the SEC. And I think they have the best corner in the SEC. Now, I think collectively at running back, they're solid. I think at wide receiver, collectively, they're pretty good. Collectively at tight end, they're pretty good. And they have talent in a lot of other spots on that football team. So they're still going to have a lot of dudes. I think they're going to play a little bit more complimentary football. I think Kevin Steele was a good hire because he's not as aggressive as Pete Golding, and that will lead to that football being a little bit more complimentary. And I actually think getting away from being overly reliant on individual players, which I do believe they became the last couple of years, Bryce Young, Will Anderson, maybe at other times like a Devonta Smith, is going to help this Alabama team maybe exceed people's expectations.
You talk about a changing quarterback. You know Carson Beck is going to be starting for Georgia, and he'll be taking over for Stetson Bennett, who won two national championships. How likely do you think it is that Georgia three-peats this upcoming year?
Very likely, because, number one, I don't think the pool of teams that can actually win a national championship is very big this year. I think the pool of teams that can get to the playoffs is pretty big. I would go, 13, 14, 15 with that number, but actually get there and win it, I don't think that number is very big, and Georgia's one of those teams. They're going to have the best receiver core that Kirby Smart's had, top to bottom. And then that's not even including the tight ends, but you throw in Brock Bowers, who's the unicorn, do everything on offense. The offensive line is still going to be one of the best in college football. Stacy Searles does a great job with that group. Defensively, I think Dumas Johnson is set to have a breakout year at linebacker. They're not what they've been up front, but they're still going to be on par with the best defensive lines in college football. They just might not be clearing away that much better than everybody else up front like they have been the last couple of seasons. And I think guys like Mykael Williams could have breakout years up there at edge defender and do some nice things. They're pretty good on the back end as well. I think they got the best safety in the SEC, maybe the best tandem of safeties in the SEC. So, and listen, they're battle tested. They've been there. They've done it. They know what it takes. They know what it's like. And that schedule's not rough at all. So I absolutely think they can get there. I absolutely think they can win it again. I would have Georgia as my favorite to win it right now, even though I understand the three-peat and how difficult it is. I don't think many people thought that they could repeat in the manner in which they did either. So, yeah, I'd have Georgia right there in the mix. I don't think Carson's back going to have to do a lot of heavy lifting early. So by the time they get to the SEC championship game, the college football playoff, I don't think that'll be any sort of a rookie quarterback or new quarterback or anything like that.
Cole Kublik, if Georgia doesn't three-peat, who's the team that you're most confident in the entire college football landscape to be hoisting that national championship trophy?
Alabama. Because you look at who they're going to play. You talk about being tested. You know, they're going to play against, say, high-powered Tennessee offense again. You know, they're going to play you're going to play Texas in week three, which is a team that I think is going to be a lot better than people imagine. And I think, too, just from a coaching perspective, having been there, knowing how to manage things, and like I said a little bit earlier, you know, where they're going to be best at in the SEC. They got a dominant player off the edge, a dominant player in the middle of that defense. They have a linebacker I think that could bust out this year in Deontay Lawson. Young, hadn't played a ton, has a chance to be really good. I just think collectively at more positions, they're better than a lot of other teams. Does Ohio State have a great group of wide receivers? Absolutely. I don't know how their quarterback situation is going to look. They have my favorite tight end coming back in college football in Cade Stover. Love the kid. He's an absolute animal. I want that defensive line to be consistent week in, week out. I want to see those corners be consistent week in, week out. Yeah, you got one guy who can take over a game. We've seen it up front. But I want to see that consistently week in, week out. And physically, you know, can you get some of that mojo back to where you can match up with Michigan late in the season? I don't know. The last 2 years hadn't really looked like it. I think Michigan would maybe be next in line, but they need to become a little bit more explosive. I mean, Jim Harbaugh beat Georgia up there for a reason. He knows what the standard is. He knows the teams they're going to have to go up against when it comes to actually winning a national title. And they got the physicality part down. But I think they need to get a little bit more athletic, a little bit more explosive. He's been recruiting and portaling in that direction. Just don't know if he's on par with where it needs to be to go beat one of those teams yet, but they would probably be next in line.
I want to throw two more teams at you, Cole Kublik. We know Tennessee's going to have Joe Milton, and they've lost a lot when you look at Hendon Hooker and also Jalin Hyatt. We all seen the throw that Milton had at the Manning Academy. And then LSU, you're number two for Brian Kelly in year one. It was very successful getting the SEC championship game. Your expectations for LSU and Tennessee this season are what?
I'll start with LSU because their expectation would not be too far behind Alabama. I think they would be right there in the mix to go win a national championship this year. You got an experienced quarterback, and everybody around him is comfortable with how that offense is going to be managed. They know how to utilize his legs now. They know he's comfortable going a little bit faster. It took them a while to figure that out. It took them four or five games to get the offensive line straightened out, and now they're going to have better depth at that spot. Mason Taylor back at tight end. I think the best receiver core in the country after Ohio State is in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, collectively. I mean, they got freaking robots at wide receiver. When you see these guys, like, they physically don't look like they should be able to do the things that they're capable of doing. And up front, Mason Smith comes back at D-tackle. Mekhi Wingo was at D-tackle last year, vastly underrated. And you got a linebacker in Harold Perkins that can take over games. So Matt Howell's got a lot to work with on that side of the ball. Brian Kelly did an amazing job. Want to see them follow through with it year two with what they did year one. Won't sneak up on anybody. As far as Tennessee's concerned, I think they'll be fine. I don't think they're going to push for a spot in the playoff because defensively, they weren't very good last year. And they lost a couple of key pieces. Now, they could be a little more stout up front with Amari Thomas back and a couple of other defenders. I think they could be a little bit better there. Jalen McCullough back at linebacker. I just don't know if they have the bodies defensively to go out and get stops against a laundry list of offenses that are going to be really good on that schedule. And I think Joe Milton will be a good college quarterback. Is he going to be as consistent as Hendon Hooker? I don't know. But I know he's going to have extra ability. They're going to be able to run in between the tackles more. They may take more shots down the field, which they already took a ton. And that offensive line might not be as good. Darnell Wright was great last year, like really good. Yeah. The two best linemen are gone. And you got a transfer coming in from Miami they're excited about, transfer from Texas that could help. But I still think that the line's going to be as good as it was last year. So, and people have another year of seeing that offense on tape. I'll be interested to see some of the adjustments made. Because when you watch the Bama game, you watch the Kentucky game, I mean, it's two, three plays in which Tennessee just kind of got their number. Do teams go back, adjust, and maybe try to find a little more success this year with what they weren't able to do a year ago? I don't know. I think they're going to be scary. I think they can get any team on their schedule any week. I just don't know if they're going to have the consistency to go out there and win 10, 11 games again this year.
Cole Kublik, will this be Jimbo Fisher's final season with A&M?
No. They're too talented for that. And Bobby Petrino, number one, is not coming into this situation to have some sort of back and forth, some sort of maybe, if, and, or but. Bobby Petrino has just enough MF-er in him to go out there and call plays and not be told about how he's going to call plays or who's going to call plays or anything like that. Like, that's not going to take place. So I think Bobby's going to run it. I think it's going to be his offense. I don't think there's going to be any back and forth. I don't think there's going to be if, ands, or buts. And I think when you look at that team, a very good wide receiver core, should have a really good offensive line. It's a group that has a lot of returning starters back. They've got some good film out there. They've got some bad film out there. They need to take a step this year and try to become dominant, because I don't think they're as good at running back as they were last year with A-Chain. I think a decent group of tight ends, but, I mean, they got receivers that can burn you. They have defensive linemen that can take over a game. I don't love the second and third level of the defense, but I do believe that you talk talent top to bottom, outside of Georgia, Alabama, LSU, A&M's right there with those teams, maybe just a smidge behind. And if they – the only concern, honestly, Zach, is there a culture problem? I don't know the answer to that question. I'm not pointing a finger saying that there is, but some of the things that happened last year would elude some people to believe that. If there's not, then they have the ability to be able to go out there and win a bunch of games this year. So I don't think this is last year. I think it'll be a solid season. Is it going to be 12-0? Probably not, but it's not going to be 5 or 6 wins.
I know you got to bounce. Last thing I'll ask you, Hugh Freeze with your alma mater at Auburn, do you think long-term that will be a successful hire?
Yes. There's already more alignment within the administration and the top end of the boosters and the people that run the collective and the fan base than I've seen in my lifetime. And people will say, well, what about Tommy Tuberville? He's there forever, this and that. They got on a jet and went to Louisville and tried to hire Bobby Petrino. You say, what about Gus Malzahn? He won SEC championships, played for national championships. He did this, he did that. Well, they gave him an extension that one side of the boosters didn't want him to get, so the other faction basically said, we're pulling out, we're done, we're not going to do anything anymore. This is the most alignment, and I realize it's early, that I have seen from everybody involved in Auburn Athletics as long as I've been alive. And I think that Coach Freeze has already shown recruiting, what he's doing in high school recruiting. He's going to be able to make a difference. Zach, you realize half of that team's starters this year are going to be players that he and his staff got out of the portal. I mean, he went and got the best quarterback on the roster, the best tackle on the roster, the best center on the roster, the best tight end on the roster, the two best receivers on the roster, the best nose guard on the roster, two of the best linebackers on the roster, the best edge rusher on the roster. I mean, he did that in one offseason through the portal. So that's one big hurdle. And I realize the next big hurdle is organizing it, motivating it, getting it all on the same page, and executing things on the field against opponents that are also pretty good. But I don't think anybody expected them to be where they are from a talent perspective right now.
He's always must listen at ESPN SEC Network and each and every morning, Mac and Cube on Jocks FM. He's, of course, is Cole Kublik. Cole, always great to catch up with you. Thank you.
Thanks, Zach. I appreciate you having me.
There he is, Cole Kublik, joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Two things, actually three things that really stand out to me from that conversation, Hickey. One, I definitely agree with him. In a weird way, I think people, and this is so bizarre to say, are kind of like sleeping on Alabama this year, where everyone looks at the dominance of Georgia, and then you lose Will Anderson Jr., you lose Bryce Young, you didn't even make the SEC title game last year for Alabama, and I just don't feel like there is a lot of buzz with Bama, but you look at the rest of the college football landscape, Hickey, it's not like we have a lot of confidence in other teams. Like, don't get me wrong, USC should be really good on the offensive side of the ball with Caleb Williams, but what are they going to do defensively? Texas, I know people want to proclaim that they're back. I've been hearing that for the last decade. I know there's nice expectations with them. Michigan is a team that I really like heading into the season, and we've talked about I would maybe place a future on them to win a national championship if Georgia does not win at all. But you look at Michigan, they've proven now they can beat Ohio State, they get to the college football playoff, but in back-to-back years, they lose in the opening round, the semifinal of the college football playoff. So if it's not going to be Georgia, I don't have a tough time giving Saban, I know that the benefit of the doubt has been the big word the last like 3 weeks on the show going back to the Dame stuff, but I'll use it here. I have no problem giving Nick Saban the benefit of the doubt.
It's a losing game to bet against Nick Saban, I get that, but Cole brought it up before, and that's my biggest concern. Quarterback is a major question mark. Like, you look and sure, you're bringing Tyler Buchner over from Notre Dame. He's not very good in the limited opportunities he got there. And the fact that he was brought in so late means that Alabama did not, like, whether it's Jalen Milroe or any other quarterback on the roster, did not feel comfortable whatsoever with those guys right there. So now you're bringing in a guy that was not even going to be a starter in Notre Dame into compete slash maybe be your guy. I don't like that whatsoever in terms of trying to win a national title. I get it's one position, but it's also the most important position in football.
And isn't that funny? We have now got accustomed to Alabama having these great quarterbacks where forever they didn't have the best quarterbacks in the world, and look at the talent that was on that roster.
Right. Oh, yeah. Long time, but this year it's definitely flipped.
Now, the other two things, and I know we'll be agreement here, I disagree when it comes to Jimbo Fisher. Cole's not wrong in the talent that they have, but they had a lot of talent last year. And look at what they did last year. They were 5-7. Now, I don't think that they're going to win only five games this year, but is it going to be enough where the A&M fan is going to be satisfied? And I'll bet that the answer is going to be no. And once again, probably the only way that his best case staying there is the contract that they have given out to him, because that's just still ridiculous. But we've seen a lot of times big-time contracts knocking in the way of a coach, especially the SEC, being handed his walking papers.
I mean, what's the point of keeping a coach around if you can't coach the talent? Like, that's half the job, right? I get recruiting's a big part of it, and you got to get talent in. But if you're not doing anything with it, like, what's the point? Like, it's one thing to go, like, Kirby Smart brought a lot of talent in before he kind of broke through and won national titles. But his, quote-unquote, down years were like 10-2 or 9-3.
And he was knocking on the door, choking Alabama.
Right. We're talking about 5-7. Like, it's like, it's not even the same stratosphere of, oh, like, Kirby Lee showed you signs that he got a lot of talent in Georgia and could maybe win one day. It was just, will he win the big one? Jimbo's not even close to winning a half a big game, let alone the big game right now at A&M. Like, it's just light years away.
I've never heard anyone say, well, a coach isn't close to winning half a big game, let alone a full
big game. It's disrespectful to say he can't win the big game because he's not even close to even being in a game that's big enough for him to win.
That may be the best hickeyism I've ever heard from you. I think you have to ditch the shower no cap bit, and you just kind of judge people's success if they could come close to winning half a big game. And they could show up for the first half only and then forget about the second half. And then finally, I know he did attend Auburn, but Cole Kublik has always been fair with us. I think that says a lot, and I'm not the biggest fan of Hugh Freeze, but I think it says a lot when he says that's the most alignment that he's seen in his lifetime. I know that program has been up and down and it's been a crazy roller coaster ride, but early on to be able to say that, I don't think Cole says that unless he truly does believe it.
100%. The Gus Malzahn comparison is obviously perfect because they would give him, I feel like, an extension every other year, because every other year after that, they would try to fire him when he went like 8-4.
Yeah.
And Gus was a roller coaster. The highs were very high, going to, you know, or knocking the door of the College Football Playoff, going to a national title game, winning the SEC, but the lows would be very, very low, and it's early, right? And obviously, things change once the games actually start, and if Hugh Freeze doesn't win, he'll be run out of town pretty fast, just like a lot of other coaches who have not won, been run out of town. But early on so far, it's a good sign.
And I know that they wanted Lane Kiffin, and that didn't happen for whatever the reasons were, but you end up with Hugh Freeze. Say what you want about Hugh Freeze. He wins games. He knows how to win games. And clearly, he's dominated the transfer portal here. And at Auburn, all it takes, you go have back-to-back good seasons, and then that excitement's right back with that program. And here's also the other thing. Even though I don't think they got their top candidate, when they hired Brian Harsin, no one was like, woohoo, that's amazing. This was actually a hire where you could elicit some excitement from the fan base, where it's okay, even though it wasn't the guy at the top of the list, in my belief, you at least got a guy that was a respectable candidate in the coaching world.
This is a really good hire. I think he's going to have a lot of success. I think he fits Auburn well. I know his exit at Ole Miss was anything but glorious, we'll say. And maybe just be
just take his cell phone away.
Right.
And they're making sure he doesn't tweet, right?
That's
and they
right.
take access of his Twitter?
That's right. So they're already putting some guardrails up, but the guy wins and he gets talent to the program. I think he'll do well at Auburn.
All right, we'll come on back. We'll give you the latest with DeAndre Hopkins. And also, we know one team that has made a contract offer to Dalvin Cook.
Introducing L2R, smarter, safer, faster.com. Your solution to combat the negative effects of sitting at a desk. Sitting at a desk 8 hours a day is as harmful as smoking. If you're stuck at a desk all day, you don't need to quit your job. You need to join our Desk to 5K program. No running experience is required. As a doctor of physical therapy, I'll be honored to guide you every step of the way to reach your running and fitness goals. Let's conquer running together and make it enjoyable. Visit L2R, smarter, safer, faster.com and start moving today.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
All right, it is The Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Another day and another report, or in this case, reports, when it comes to DeAndre Hopkins and Dalvin Cook. So the two teams that we know have hosted DeAndre Hopkins for a visit have been the Patriots and also the Tennessee Titans. According to Sal Palantonio, the Browns and the Panthers are also lurking in the DeAndre Hopkins sweepstakes. That word to me is a very peculiar word by one Sal Palantonio, lurking. Because it gives off the vibe that they're not like fully invested right now, but they're just kind of hovering and they're waiting. So what I'm about to say is probably going to contradict me putting the emphasis on the word lurking. But if those teams were seriously interested in the Browns or the Panthers, wouldn't they have already brought in DeAndre Hopkins for a visit? Or is this more so when you're ready or getting closer to making a decision, hit us up and we'll give you one last offer and we'll make one offer to you? Because that word lurking, when I first read this earlier this morning, when it's like, oh, Browns and Panthers, that's the first thing I saw are interested in DeAndre Hopkins. I said to myself, well, wouldn't they just bring him in for a visit if they were actually interested? But when you hear the word lurking, that sets me down a different path here, where I start to wonder, maybe there is some credence to this report from Sal Pal.
My thought goes to money. Like, hey, we're interested in you. We'd love to have you on the team, but maybe his asking price is not what they feel comfortable with. Right, it's reported that he wants the Odell Beckham deal, Hopkins, that is. So $15 million. I think Odell's incentives are an extra $3 million, I think, so we can get up to $18 million. If that's what he's dead set on getting, I could see the Browns and Panthers both be like, eh, I'm good. But if your price lowers, maybe let's just say, I don't know, throwing a random number, $10 million you're willing to sign for, okay, now we're back in. That's how I guess I would read the situation where they want him, but the money and the price point is not where they feel comfortable at the moment.
Now, the Browns and Panthers currently have more cap space than the New England Patriots, and let's see where Tennessee is on this, and Tennessee. So if they don't want to do whatever the Patriots have kind of talked about or whatever Tennessee maybe has talked about, and I would assume that the Patriots have an idea what DeAndre Hopkins wants and DeAndre Hopkins has a sense of what their offer is, shouldn't they be able to top that just by looking at the available cap space, Hickey? You would think.
You would think. I mean, easy numbers would say so. Now, is he looking for a multi-year deal? I don't also know. I don't think so, but that could be maybe a reason for a holdup.
By the way, I can only think of one thing when I hear the name Sal Palantonio right now.
Okay.
I was once at a Sixers game. He was covering the Sixers game. You know how when it's not in football season, they'll throw him on different assignments?
Here and there. ESPN loves working their talent.
I was once in the, I guess you could say, tunnel of Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia. So there's a bathroom there.
Okay.
Sal Palantonio was in the bathroom. May have cut some cheese in the bathroom when I was standing right next to him.
He did?
Yes, he did, not me.
And you were next to him in the urinal?
Yeah, and it was pretty loud, too.
Did he say anything afterwards or just pretend like nothing happened?
Was whistling. I kid you not, he was whistling.
Kind of respect, to be honest. Just not even caring, just letting it go. Did you guys have, like, did he know who you, like?
No.
Like, so it's just like, in his mind, a random stranger taking a number one right next to you. Ah, screw it, I gotta let it go. This is the place to do it.
I've been in the same room enough times as Sal Palantonio, but he won't know who I am. Like, I don't think we've ever had an actual long conversation other than, like, oh, someone saying, like, nice question or something like that at a press conference when I covered the Eagles or something.
So
like
it wasn't like one of those, I'm friends with you, I'm comfortable, I'm just going to let it go,
no.
Don't judge me sort of thing. It
nope.
Was basically you just could have been anyone in the world.
Yeah.
I'm letting it go.
And
I got to go.
It was loud.
I kind of like the whistle, too.
I can't whistle, but I wish I could whistle because it was kind of like in a Curb Your Enthusiasm cadence. The whistle is like, if you just imagine that was actually a whistle.
And I'm sure he tried to do that to cover up a little bit and hopefully no one noticed.
He definitely cut the cheese, though.
Got to do what you got to do, Sal.
He wasn't mic'd up, but he may as well have been because it was pretty damn loud. So that's all I can think of now whenever I see Sal Palantonio on television. This was years ago. This is when I was still living in Philadelphia, so this is a while back.
Anytime I even hear Sal Palantonio, I think of what? Well, your experience makes sense. I just think Sal Palantonio.
ESPN.
His sign-off is...
It was always Sal Palantonio. ESPN.
ESPN.
So that's the latest on the DeAndre Hopkins stuff. Where do you think D-Hop ends up going? I really do believe that it's going to be the Patriots. And also, one more point on Carolina. I feel like Carolina is the new Seattle. Remember who their GM is, Scott Fitterer, and where he comes from? Where they're always going to be, quote-unquote, in on every deal, or at least be overturning every stone on every deal like we've seen for years with John Schneider in Seattle, and that's where Scott Fitterer comes from.
The Danny Ainge, always the second team, the first team that missed out on whatever player is up for grabs.
Or the Green Bay Packers.
Whenever. Just missed. Yeah. Oh, we were interested. We almost had a deal. We were close. I will go with the Cleveland Browns still.
You're still going with the Brownies?
Link up with his old teammate. They're lurking. They're waiting. Maybe be a little aggressive. Big year for him.
I think there's too much talent on that team for him to actually consider it when you look at the actual needs for DeAndre Hopkins, where he wants the most money and he wants the number one targets.
Would he be the number one receiver? I would say yes. I think he's better than Amari Cooper.
Amari Cooper's pretty damn good. He's very underrated. Yeah, Hopkins is better, but you could go to a place like, let's just say, New England, where they don't have a number one wide receiver.
Carolina,
or anyone that's in that conversation right now. Carolina,
Tennessee.
Too.
It's kind of a trend of at least the two teams he met with. Big need for a number one wide receiver.
He's like Dame. He says he wants to win, but the actions don't actually show it. And then finally, Dalvin Cook, according to Tom Pelissero, has multiple offers on the table, and he suggested teams like the Jets, Dolphins, Broncos, and Patriots are potential landing spots. Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald reports that the Dolphins are one of the teams that have offered, actually, Dalvin Cook a contract. And Jackson added that he has no knowledge of the details of the offer. So take that for whatever it's worth. Dalvin Cook has been linked now for months to join the Miami Dolphins. I, for a while, have predicted that it's going to be the New York Jets. But it does feel like, Kiki, that it will either be the Jets or the Dolphins. But Pelissero threw out the Broncos, which I did find compelling. Because remember, when he finally did become available, a lot of people did shoot down that interest potentially from Denver. But if it's a wait-and-see thing and the price comes down... As you were saying earlier with DeAndre Hopkins, maybe that gets another team or two into the conversation. It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We will take a break. When we come on back, Derek Carr speaks once again, and I am kind of over Derek Carr and whatever he has to say about his exit from the Las Vegas Raiders.